Hey, man, Last Coach Mike, lastcoachmike.com. I can't wait for you to hear this podcast. This is actually our second podcast or go-around with York College head coach Brandon Childs. I'm trying to keep these timeless, but, man, at the end of the 2016 season, they had a Capital Athletic Conference championship, I think the first in their history, where they beat Salisbury. I mean, no easy feat, right? Had a deep run into the quarterfinals, losing an OT to Gettysburg in 2016. There's so much cool stuff, out of 140 hours of podcasts, and as you know, I usually talk to the guys an hour off air too. This is definitely in the top five or six most creative practice plan design coaches that I have ever interviewed. So that's like 200 hours of NCAA coaching conversations. This guy's unbelievable. Listen to the first podcast. There's some great ideas in there. This one we feature kind of a shooting drill that's actually a 6 feet 5, but it's really a shooting drill in coach's mind. We also go through, he starts practice with an overtime period. He used to start it with a 7v7, a lot of creative stuff. Some fun stick work drills, this rapid fire 300, we feature transition drills, 6v6 on the half field with a 6v5 element, 3v3 in a way you're going to want to try immediately, where the poles get to come back and play offense in a counterattack format. Anyway, so much good stuff. This is one of the most creative young coaches in the country today, and as you know, I've interviewed a bunch. I think you're going to love it. Get your pencil and paper out. Get ready to go. I am so humbled by all you've done for my site. Thank you so, so much, and special thanks to our buddies at Crossover for making all this possible. Without further ado, Coach Brandon Childs, York College.
Hey, that's Coach Mike here, lastcoachmike.com. Love you guys to death. I am so excited to have Brandon Childs from York back. As you know, we try and keep these somewhat timeless, but here is we move into the final weeks of the 2016 season. Clearly, this is a program that's on a great run. Hey, Coach, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
I think this is where you say where the website's responsible for your success, but knowing that you're a Christian, you're probably not going to say that, so we'll just let it go.
All right, I'll let that one go.
Hey, I told you before, man, I listened to the previous podcast preparing for this. You were really, really, really good. I didn't think I was that great, so, I'm going to try and do a little bit better this time around.
All right, I'll try to do a little worse then. We'll even it out.
No, I don't think you could possibly do worse, man. Yeah, I love your creativity. Hey, Coach, I want to come back and visit some of the things I was listening to in terms of your basic scheme, for the practices, which has some really creative twists. We get a lot of coaches, obviously, want to set the tone for the pace of practice right from the get-go, and some of them actually start with a 2v1 to get that pace ingrained in what's going to happen over the next 90 or 120 minutes in the practice. After the stretching, you had kind of a unique philosophy. You were coming out and running short field 7v7 games a couple of times a week. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, this year we did that a lot in the preseason this year. And then as the year went on and practices were becoming carbon copies of one another as the season got a little bit longer. What we started to do in place of the 7v7 to get more people playing and a little bit more realistic for the competition that we were facing, we would just play an overtime period to start practice. So we would we have the luxury of having the clock on and everything. And this year we actually had our first student manager. I haven't had one of those in the past, and manager puts, 4 minutes on the clock, and we face it off, and we play until someone scores. We probably did that two or three times a week, maybe even more, right out of the get-go. So they would do their dynamic warm-up. We don't post the practice plan or anything like that here. So typically in the beginning of the practice, our D guys are in green and our O guys are in white. We'll go through the dynamic warm-up. You bring them in. We get four focus points of each practice, and then, bam, I would hit them with overtime and put them in their colors and face it off and play. Same kind of principle as the 7v7. It's just a little more realistic to what we're doing on game day. So that was kind of a new twist on it this season.
Well, Coach, in our last podcast, you were talking about that's how you often ended practice.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing that we started to do a little bit more, and it pains me to say it, but we started to do a little bit more stick work to start practice this year. We had a young team here at York, and I just felt like they needed to get some positive touches with their sticks before we got into anything anything where I really wanted to teach them. So we started to do a little bit more elementary stick work in the beginning of practice this year, and as that went on, towards the end of the year, I was always kind of cognizant of, you know, what's boring for them, and so...
Wait a second. If you're going to talk to my listeners, we can't have words like cognizant. You're going to have to limit this to two syllables or less.
All right, I hear you. But yeah, we certainly wanted to make sure that, you know, we were still having a pretty fun atmosphere at practice, and so our stick work drills, we would try to come up with creative ways to make those stick work drills fun. So they were getting, you know, what I call positive touches, or maybe better worded, the bad touches out of their system before we started really getting into, you know, our teaching. And by, you know, the beginning of May, we ran out of fun ways to do the stick work. And so, playing overtime, putting them on the clock and, you know, it created a tone to practice, that is hard to get doing stick work. So that was why we did it.
So tell me about the most fun creative stick work drill. You got my interest intrigued now, man.
Well, typically our stick work is shooting. You know, some, you know, the kids probably don't. If the kids on my team hear this, my secret is out. They think we're doing shooting drills, but just variation of skip passes, clearing their hands, sometimes with defenders on them that ends in a shot. So even if our D guys are. So I guess I'll start, you know, with the defense. If our D guys, we do a lot of like in tight stick work to our goal, and
yeah,
it's kind of like a 3-on-2 in tight space. It's a ground ball they have to pick up in traffic, and then they've got their goalie to kind of get them going in tight space with someone riding their hand. So it's like a 3-on-2 that kind of becomes a 4-on-2 with the goalie. And what we'll do now is we'll add a goal just above the restraining line, facing where they're doing the drill, and. As the guy's breaking up, ultimately they'll get it up and out. And when they get it up and out, we'll have them go down and take a shot on that goal that's there. Just to, you know, give them one more element of fun to it. And our D guys shoot. So we had a couple D guys score some goals, so we'll give that drill credit for it, I guess.
Well, you know, it's funny, man. When I do, and this is not about us, but I mean, when I do coaching clinics across the country where we do film on the drills that we've gotten from great coaches like you, and then actually run a 90-minute practice, you know, so they can see the pace.
Right.
Because they just don't get it. You know, we put everybody in the shooting drills. And it's funny. You know, I tell the coaches, in my mind, it's not a shooting drill at all. I mean, I'm really not spending a lot of time about putting the pass on the ear or you know, if it's a skip, you know, pass drill to, you know, I am barking for them to make sure the pass is high and away so the guy can catch it and release it, you know. But, I mean, we don't spend a lot of time coaching in that because it's so rapid fire.
Right.
And we have one person count, one player in touches, you know, and usually we can get 50 or 60 touches inside of 12 or 14 minutes because of the pace of the drill. But I tell the coaches, in my mind, it's not a shooting drill. You know, in my mind, it's jumping jacks.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's fun. You know, and, you know, coach and travel, guys go, oh, man, this is so cool. You know, a lot of times we'll put the goalies in those drills, too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Instead of having them split dodge, maybe they're going to walk the dog and then come down, but they got to roll away to make a pass. You know, last time we talked about the critical nature of the throwbacks, you know.
Right.
Where it's not necessarily, you know, a pass across the body, but he's going to do a roll back. You know, have the goalies do that in right-handed, left-handed. Well, the guy told me in my goalie camp I don't need to play left-handed. I said, well, you know, humor me. yeah, I couldn't agree more, you know. And, yeah, so we probably shoot 15 minutes at the beginning of every practice, different shooting drills every day, presumably that emulate some portion of the offense, you know.
Right.
Emulate. Did you hear that, Coach? Emulate.
Yeah, so I started to become a believer that with the kids nowadays, they almost need, you know, 5 or 10 minutes to just get the bad stuff out of them. And so to rep more and coach less in those first 5 or 10 minutes, I don't think is a bad thing. And then it just allows for you to meet them where they are, and then vice versa when it comes time to really implementing. So we've ultimately ended up, when we really want to do a shooting drill where we're going to teach and coach, we've ultimately ended up changing how we do that, and it becomes a little bit more realistic, I guess. And that was kind of the drill that I would want to share with you guys.
Yeah, actually, we'll shoot for 15 minutes with all the players. Some days the goalies, not every day. And then when the defense goes down to do their work, I'll do an additional 7 or 8 minutes focusing on one portion of the offense in a shooting drill.
Right.
In kind of like a, I hate to use the term, but I mean for the listeners, edification, I'm on a roll! We're actually running like a three-man skeleton, and more and more, I want to get to your drill, but more and more, we're seeing, teams slide adjacent up, when we start to clear through that wing attackman on a drive from up top.
Right.
So we felt like we needed to integrate a couple of shooting drills where we were trying to get that guy the ball or having him go in and come back and curl back or something to compete against that slide, because I just haven't seen it much traditionally,
Right, right.
Anyway, yeah, let's go to your drill.
All right. Well, ultimately,
number one, you last time in our podcast, you had very boring names for your drills. Tell me you've at least come up since a couple of years when we talked to you, and you got a cool name for this.
No, we don't.
Oh, coach.
We don't. It is basically what we do is very similar to what you're talking about with like repping our skeleton offense. And a couple passes, and then it finishes in a shot. What we felt like was they weren't realistic shots, and so the name is the offense and then the word shooting. So if we're running our 300 offense, it's 300 shooting. If we're running our 900 offense, it's 900 shooting. So, yes, we've remained pretty boring when it comes to our names.
You and every coach we've interviewed, man, don't feel like you're alone.
Yeah, all right. But anyway, with all that being said, basically what we've decided to do is if we're going to skeleton our offense, if it's out of like an umbrella set where you got three across and a single crease or two guys behind or something, we'll put our guys in that set and then we'll have our defense guard it, but with a man down. So what ends up happening is we'll dodge just like we would in our offense. The defense is a man down, so you kind of have to predetermine as a coach, what you think your opposing team is, what look they're going to give you, and then you can decide which guy defensively to take out of the drill.
When you say look, are you talking about the slide coach?
Correct. So, so we're going to, we can predetermine, we have so much film at our hands and disposal and know over the course of time, or maybe we got exposed defensively by a team and we want to get better at this exact moment of our offense. So through film or whichever, we will set the drill up to get our guys better at that scenario. So
awesome, yeah.
We'll set our guys up in the offense. We'll have a guy defending the ball and we'll have a guy ready to slide, and if we wanted to work on, as you're talking about, sliding off the clear through, that'll be the hot guy. If we want to work on them coming from the inside, that'll be the hot guy. But somewhere along the six, they're down a guy as well. And then we'll slide to it. So on the back side, our defense is going to be two men down behind the ball. Ultimately, I think if you're doing, you're doing a good job and you have some pretty skilled players, a shot is going to happen off of a couple passes if they already were a man down and then slid. And so what ends up happening is offensively, they're learning how quickly you need to move that ball to the backside. Cause a good college defense, even a man down, is going to be able to recover and rotate to that. So, it becomes really realistic stick work, getting the ball out of your stick when you're slid to. And then the guy who catches it either at X behind the goal, or we call top center Y here. So the guy who either catches it forward pass at X or throwing it back through Y has got to move it quickly. He's typically the one that's not guarded. So he has the easy job of catching it and moving it. And then there's some realistic shot that happens on the backside. If you move it quickly enough and things are clicking that day, there's a time and room that's taking place. If you know, it takes a little bit longer to get over there, he may have to hitch and go by a approaching defender. But pretty much you're going to get a shot on that backside by doing the drill the way in which we do it. So now there's a goalie in it. There's defensemen that are breaking out to you, and it becomes a really realistic shot. And those are the shooting reps that we really coach and teach. Part of the reason we went to this is because it seemed as though the best way to get our defense to talk through those chaotic situations where maybe sometimes two guys do slide to the ball. You know, your clear through thinks it's his turn to go. The crease guy never heard that this guy's declaring himself hot. Two guys go to the ball. Well, now you are, five on three on the back of that.
Right.
And defensively, you know, you'd like to think you're never going to have two guys go to the ball, but it happens. And when it does, this drill has ultimately bailed us out quite a bit. And I think because we came up with this drill to help our offense take more realistic shots while skeleton through our sets, we kind of inadvertently stumbled upon the fact that we've become a pretty good recover and rotation team behind it, because
you can't just
recover to the crease and bump a guy out from the inside in this drill. You're going to have to rotate and really, really communicate to guard it. And it's really helped us on both ends of the ball, this drill.
Sorry, I'm taking notes here, man. I got a couple of questions, man.
Sure.
So this is basically a 6v5?
It's a 6v5, but with man-to-man principles. You know, it's almost as if there's an imaginary defender on one of the six offensive guys, and we will determine which one that is based on, you know, what look we want our team to get, you know, to get better at offensively.
Yeah, let me ask a couple of specific questions, and I got a general question. If you're a high school coach,
yep.
You know, how do you or do you keep your defense from getting overzealous in this drill?
I mean, we talk about a lot defensively here. We talk about giving up the shots that we want to give up. And so our approaches to the ball become everything, because we want to give up, you know, low angle, low percentage shots. So that's the terminology that we're using when we're teaching them defensively what to do in this drill. First and foremost, you just have to talk. And we kind of tell our guys, it doesn't really matter what you do defensively so long as you're talking in front of you and behind you. So if I'm about to get overzealous and I feel that urge to go out and maybe overextend on the throwback pass and make the guy that's catching it at a Y a little uncomfortable, you can do that in our defense so long as you're telling the guy behind you you're about to do it. So you got to communicate as to what you're doing, but we want to buy time in those situations and kind of bait them into taking a lower percentage shot. So that's the teaching point we're trying to make. But there's no doubt there's opportunities for you to be a little aggressive in that rotation and anticipate where the next pass is going, because nothing disrupts a backside, ball reversal like a turnover. So if you can step out and create a turnover by being a little overzealous, we'll let you do it, so long as you're communicating that, because it's going to mean a pretty early rotation behind you.
Yeah, and you talked about this in our podcast a couple of years ago, what most coaches would call a transition drill. You refer to it as a shooting drill because you're trying to get that shot, like you said, you know, where the optimum place is that you want the players to shoot. And that may even be, in today's world, personnel-driven as much as anything else, you know.
Yeah, we're pretty good at shooting when no one's on us and there's no goalie in the goal. I mean, if you went to a York College practice and they're out there, our guys are always out there shooting. So you step up, you come out to practice and they're out there shooting, you know. Man, these guys can swing it and they can hit any spot they want. You put people in their hands and an offensive, a game plan and all the things that are incorporated in the scouting report, their shooting percentage, and a goalie, their shooting percentage goes down. And so what we try to do in these drills is create, you know, a really realistic rapid fire. So in this drill, I mean, that's the other point of this. there's a line of Dodgers, and then the other five guys offensively stay where they are.
Oh, great idea. Okay.
And so now the second ball, once that shot happens, the second ball is in probably 3 seconds after that shot was either saved or
okay.
went
that makes five. Sense.
And so it truly is like a rapid fire. That's what we'll call it. We'll call it rapid fire 300 shooting because it's got to be quick paced. So those guys will get back to their sets. And then after a minute or a minute and a half, we'll sub out the five offensive players that were off the ball and the four defensive players that were off the ball and put in a new nine. And then we'll do it for about a minute and a half with that group and then sub them again. And that also works on the continuity of the guys that are playing with each other. So if the second midfield line was up, they've gone through it, we'll then maybe put in the third midfield line to rep it in this drill after about a minute and a half when we put the new nine in.
So, Brandon, let me ask you a question, man. If you were coaching a U15 or a high school team,
yep.
would you introduce, and I'm thinking in my own mind, I don't know if this is a good idea or if it's counterproductive to what you're trying to do here, and that is not give them a totally uncontested shot the way they would in a skeleton shooting drill. Might you start this drill with nubs?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
If you had a U15 team or a high school team, I mean, we're not getting the stick on the hands or even an approach. You know, with a pole is a lot different than approach with a nub in terms of the intimidation to the shooter.
Yeah, even in terms of the stick work before the ball gets to the shooter, it would be advantageous to take their sticks away on the defensive end. On both sides of the ball, defensively, they're going to have to be smarter with their approaches. They don't have a stick to rely on. But then offensively, you don't run the risk of someone, a good slide deep in the hands of that Dodger. Now he can't throw it back. And then the shot that you were hoping to get in the drill never even happens.
I get it.
I never really thought of it because I'm not accustomed to doing these drills for 15 year olds. But I think what you're saying makes perfect sense because it will still remain a shooting drill if you do it that way.
Well, and when I used the term overzealous before, in addition to the slide, I was, talking about, if you're coaching a high school team, you may have 15 or 16 players or maybe 18 players, that can handle the ball.
Right.
If you're doing a fast-paced skeleton shooting drill and the guy drops it, but the next rep is right on his heels, nobody really even notices or you're just trying to, in my way of thinking, like the jumping jack metaphor, it's just pure touches.
Right.
In this case, if you've got a senior all-conference defenseman or two and they're playing against, sophomores that are just developing in their skill set, at the high school level, it could be that they never get the shot off.
Right, right.
Or you never make two passes that are completed,
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I think what you're saying about the nubs.
Just a thought, that's all.
It's a really good idea, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. And then you basically run this with the umbrella set to keep it opened up on the top side?
Well, we'll do it with all of our sets.
Okay.
So if we're working on dodging from behind the goal. We'll just basically, flip the drill,
Oh man, yeah, okay.
So we want to do it with whatever offensive set we're doing. And so, this is just kind of something we figured out along the way. I think every coach needs to just start with, all right, here's our offense. This is what we want our guys doing offensively. This is where we're getting the majority of our shots and this is how teams are defending it. So throw the drill up on the board and kind of go through it to figure out, where do we take the guy away to give us the best look that we're getting on game day. And that's kind of how it evolved for us. So it's a lot simpler than it sounds. You just put your six guys out there in offense. Wherever you're initiating the offense, that's where the line of Dodgers becomes. That's the rapid fire line. The other five guys off the ball. And you tell them to go play the offense as if there are six guys out there. But naturally, being that they're down a guy and then they slide, we make them slide every time. The ball moves pretty quickly off of that slide that you're going to get a shot that's realistic to your offense. So it doesn't need to be any more complicated than, you put your team out there in the offense that your team's running. and a line where the initiation takes place, and just.
But man, I love having the drill behind, or driving it from topside or alley coming down, as well as, you know, starting it behind, or even starting it in a corner behind if you're running, you know, two attackmen behind.
Correct. Yep. So we'll just do it for all of our offensive sets, and they're learning the offense, but through a pretty rapid paced, And then, you know, as the season progresses, we'll take our D guys, our O middies, we'll go play defense, and our short stick, you know, defense midfielders will play the offense, so that they're learning the offensive concepts, and our O guys are learning the defensive concepts from the drill. And that's another way to keep it fresh, and exciting for the guys that otherwise wouldn't play offense, as opposed to doing that as much in the 6-on-6 stuff when practice gets into that.
Yeah, I couldn't do it with a 28 or a 30 man high school roster, but at York, are you running this on both sides of the field? Or you didn't run it at Norman Cage?
You know, every year this time of year and into the fall, I we need to do more at two ends so we get more reps, and I want to see everything, and we don't have we have three coaches here. We don't have an entourage of coaches, so to really coach and teach. And I'm a big believer that, we have a couple guys on our team that refer to themselves as the best mental reppers in the country. I'm a big believer that you can learn more just by watching what's happening than sometimes even when you're in it. When you're in the drill and things are happening, the ball bangs in the backside and you're trying to recover out there, it all happens so quickly you're not quite sure what's going on. If you're not in the drill and you're watching, you can learn a ton that way. And so for that reason, we will do this drill at one end. But that's because this is a very instructional time of our practice, this drill that we're doing. And we're doing it fast, and it is rapid action. But we want them to really learn while they're doing this. The drills I was talking about earlier, the stick work drills that we, trick our kids into thinking are shooting drills, those happen at two ends. Not a lot of coaching going on. But this drill will be a one end deal simply because, you know, we want to make sure they are really comprehending what we're trying to get across.
No, man, I love it. I can't wait to try it. Like I said, one of the things we try and do on the site, Brandon, is I would guess, 80% of our audience is high school coaches,
right.
and a lot of rec coaches coming down. And one of my challenges is to take drills. And the other thing that's interesting is, man, there's so few college lacrosse coaches that ever spent a lot of time coaching high school.
Right, right.
I think Purdy was a pretty recognized high school coach on the island. Tierney coached for a couple years. But even like Berkman, I think a year or two, helping with a high school. Not many.
Right.
You just don't see it. The progression in your industry is kind of like grad assistant, assistant coach, get an opportunity and perform.
Right.
As a coach coming up. So we try and find ways. When I write the articles, all that does is keep me from getting emails on how do I do this with 26 guys. Or
right.
At this time of year, as they move into their summer ball, how do I do this with 18 guys?
Right. Right.
But this drill here, we could do with an 18-man roster with a 4v3 almost as easy.
Yeah, and that was what I was going to say. And that was going to be my point, actually, when we were talking about the U15 team. You don't need to make it a 6-on-5. I mean, I think the younger the athletes get, probably the less likely all six guys in the offense are, a key part of it. So you can break that offense into parts. If it's really you're just working on kind of a three-man rotation on the backside of the dodge, then that really calls for a 4-on-4 drill. Well, I guess it would be a 4-on-3. That might be a case, though, that the smaller the numbers get, it may make more sense to even it out. So now it is actually a 4-on-4, but the slide happens really early, and you can tell them to stay on the double a little longer,
right.
Thus, stretching out the length of the recovery onto the backside. So,
but you're still focusing on moving the ball and getting it to the backside, where presumably, at some point you get a 2v1 on the backside pipe, as long as you can.
Right, and that's
that
the cross.
Or in time and room or time and space, not necessarily backside pipe.
Right, and that's ultimately why we do the drills that we do, is because lacrosse is basic, it is finding the 2-on-1, and if you're smart, like Coach Staley up at Tufts, you play a style where you play fast enough to create the two-on-one every time you cross the midfield line. If you're not so smart like Coach Childs here at York, you dodge and you move it to create that two-on-one. But either way, that's what lacrosse is. And this drill just teaches that to kids that, you know, otherwise don't get it. And that's what we're trying to do is find that two-on-one and then get really, really good when the two-on-one happens. You know, we get it to the backside and we get a team rotating on the backside. We bury it because we do this drill a lot.
Well, and I think for the coaches that are coaching high school youth that are listening, you know, you might introduce this drill for 7 or 8 minutes, and it could be that the kids aren't going to get it that day, okay? And one of my favorite things to do with new teams or you know, when somebody asks me to come in and share what we've learned, you know, with their kids, none of it's my stuff, man. I don't deserve any of the credit. All I do is, you know, record it and write it. But, yeah, this is a great opportunity to tell your kids, even though we're making it sound, I love your comment, you know, making it sound maybe more complicated than it is. At the end of the day, you know, tell the kids, hey, here's what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, give them that answer to the question why, you know, that you get so often from high school kids. The answer is not because I'm Coach of the Year. You know, because this is going to make you better on the backside pipe, because honestly, they don't care. They couldn't give a crap if you're a Coach of the Year. But yeah, you might even introduce it to them saying, I want to get this introduced for 7 or 8 minutes today. We'll come back to it, you know, at our next practice or in 2 days, and you'll ultimately get it down.
Yeah, I think in my years of doing this, I've only had one drill really work out the first time we did it. You know,
yeah,
that
exactly.
Happened this year, actually. My assistant had this great ground ball drill. We tried to do it and it worked better in practice than I thought, you know, than I even imagined. It was great, but that's the only time I can remember where on the first day that drill looked exactly how you wanted it to. It definitely takes time and, you know, just like anything else in life, you know, the more comfortable you are with the, you know, with the drill, the better the little parts of the drill are going to be. So, you know, the first day, they're just learning the drill. They're not learning the offense that you're trying to create or the defensive rotation that you're trying to create. And then as they learn the drill, it allows their brains to start to comprehend and function, you know, on what we need them to learn from the drill. So it definitely takes, you know, and this drill in particular probably takes, you know, 2 or 3 go-arounds before you're really, the kids get comfortable with what's going on.
Well, and, you know, when I tell the kids you're probably not going to get this the first time, then when it looks really sloppy, and you always have those kids that are intense, you know, they're getting frustrated, you know.
Right.
You just smile at them, you know, and say, hey, we talked about this, man. You know, we're not going to get it the first day. We're coming back to it. We're, you know, we're introducing it or, yeah, coming up. Good stuff, man. Well, in your previous practice plans from there, you went into some transition stuff. Is that still where you go after this drill and practice, Coach?
Yeah, we usually will start with some sort of but after our shooting and kind of some of our breakdowns of the, you know, the shooting or the defensive concepts that we kind of want to teach, then we get into transition. And typically end to end, but we have variations of all of it. There's half field transition stuff for shorter numbers. There's full field transition where it requires a lot of numbers. And we just try to keep these drills fresh, you know. This is where we'll change them up. We don't do the same drill over and over and over again, even though our guys might like better or some might have a better outcome. But we will do some, you know, a pretty good chunk of transition offense and defense. And simply because it's the part of the game that is the hardest to coach and teach. It's reactionary. It's good instincts. And so the more opportunities we can create in practice for us to either be down a guy or up a guy, the better we'll be on game day when that scenario presents itself.
Well, and when coaches come to our practices, you know, we're trying to utilize all the stuff that we've learned on the website, you know, shoot 135 hours and probably another 100 hours off here with coaches. You know, I often get asked, you know, you're really not scripting or coaching the defense. And, you know, my experience is, you know, after 35 years, man, you got to learn by doing and reacting, you know.
Right.
And to your point, especially with youth programs, you know, you just don't hear that many programs where if you're on the sidelines or even in the stands, you hear the defense communicating when it's not necessarily an easy thing to teach, but if you're reinforcing it always, you know, yeah, we don't really script out, you know, aside from, you know, maybe a flat break or an L break or something, which when you have two good teams playing, you just never see during a game anyway. But especially, you know, with the D-middies coming in down by the cage, having a cup of coffee, waiting for your fast break to get there. To your point, I think transition is probably more beneficial for our defense, or at least as beneficial than it is for the offense moving the ball.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is reactionary. So every situation presents itself a little bit differently. We actually started this year when we would do 6-on-6 at one end. At times, we would start with our transition middies. We don't call them D middies here. We call them transition middies. But for everybody else, the short stick D middies are down in the offense, and the O middies that are coming into the game are up by the midfield line with me. And we would predetermine on, we would sub it, you know, is basically what I'm getting at. And we would sub into our 6-on-6, and I would delay. I'd be at the midfield line with the guys that are coming in, the transition, the D middies that are getting in on defense, and the O middies that are getting in on offense. And I would be there, and I would tell them to hold off, because in our game, it's I guess kind of painful to say, but it is, I guess, the truth that a lot of the transition you're defending are 6-on-5s. And so by doing our 6-on-6 this way, where we actually had to sub in and out of it, it created a lot of 6-on-5s with me at the midfield line telling that D midi, all right, hold up here. And now there's a 6-on-5 segment where it is so reactionary and they're not anticipating. Sometimes I just let them go at the same time and they just see it as 6-on-6. Sometimes I'll hold two guys and it becomes like a 6-on-4, and it's all out of the subbing situation. And that really, they don't know it's coming, and they just see that drill again as this is just us repping 6-on-6. And coach, you know, this other team we're playing this week must be really good at subbing if we're doing it this way. You know, I think that's the mindset of our team. But we're sneaking in some 6-on-5 or 6-on-4 defensive reps, again, without maybe them realizing it. So they really have to talk through it. And then the side product of that is on game days, our guys are really keyed in on the importance of subbing and the subbing plays and games and the pick games that take place at the college level. I think we do a pretty good job on both ends defending it, but also creating it a little bit. And we practice that. So sometimes our transition drills, like I said, you know, are end to end and they're 4-on-3s or 5-on-4s, 6-on-5s end to end. But sometimes we can do it in a half field sense where, we're creating those scenarios that literally are for a defense. We just need to buy time 5 seconds. We're just buying 5 seconds. Sometimes it's 2 seconds, you know, because at our level, like you said, you don't see a lot of those 4-on-3s or 3-on-2s. You're seeing a lot of 6-on-5s that are advantages because of the subbing. And the teams that identify those situations and can buy those 4 seconds it takes for you to even up are the ones that get away without, you know, giving up a goal, you know, outside of, you know, 6-on-6.
No, absolutely. And for high school coaches, man, the substitution game is a real slippery slope, you know. Because in a high school practice, I think if you're analyzing your practices, you know, excuse me, if you're analyzing your practices, you know, to do the sub game well, you need to practice the sub game, you know.
Right.
And if you're playing two games a week, you know, in season, which is probably more common at high school than college, although colleges do it. And you know, so I've got, you know, 240 minutes to get ready for my next game. Do I really want to take 10% of that and work on my sub game? Or would I be better served taking 10% of that working on a different element? Maybe it's an express offense if this team is slow to come down, you know, when we do bring it down, ball down, or if we're seeing somebody that's got a unique adjacent slide package, or, you know, and we think we can get them out of it, but it just doesn't happen by magic. You know, you gotta practice it.
Yeah, I would imagine as a high school coach, once your student athletes get the hang of the sub game, they probably graduate a couple days after. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that time really teaches you that, and you have to figure out, you know, where you want to put that time. And over the course of, you know, 4 years and doing it in games, they're going to learn the subbing situations. But like I said, then they're probably on their way out, and then you got to start back from square one. So,
well, and you don't have a box.
It's a hard game that, you know, the higher level you get, the more complicated it gets, and probably thus the more important it is to your practice plan, no doubt.
Well, and like I said, you don't have a coach that is focusing on that in the box. you know. Because, you know, being a really great box coach means you don't see much of the game oftentimes.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, cool, man. One of the drills that I never wrote up but I loved was your 3v3 with a trailer. And then if the goalie made a save, he would throw it back out to the midfield or back out to the midfield wings. I think you got it from Kadelka or from when you were there.
Right. That's right, yeah. We call that 3-on-2 from the midline remix because if they get a stop, they break it out and they come back down to 4-on-3, and now all the defensive guys or the guys in the green here at York are now playing offense. It gives them a lot of incentive to get a stop on the 3-on-2.
Oh, I'm not sure I understood it that way. Yeah, run me through that real coach, or real
okay.
quick, coach.
So if I'm thinking of the same drill that you're mentioning, we'll put and sometimes it's defenses in one color, offenses in another. Sometimes we just have the team. Like if we were going back to that practice plan, if we played overtime, you know, rather than having all the O and switch their colors again, we'll just do, you know, the green guys have three, the white guys have two. They're at the midfield line, and I'll just break it out, and they're going 3-on-2 from the midfield line. And this drill has actually become, you know, a pretty important one with the new backcourt call or rule. Because these 3-on-3s and 3-on-2s from the midfield line going down to the cage now happen a lot more frequently. But anyway, with that being said, it's a 3-on-2 down to the goal. I'll break it out. If they get the stop, so if the green team has two guys and the white team has three, the goalie gets a stop. He fires it up the field to the lines coming down. Now they're working on their outlets. The green team's releasing two guys, thus making it a 4-on-3 back down. Now, if they were to get a stop, they'll break it out to the white guys, and it becomes,
Oh, so it's like a counterattack drill almost.
That's the good way to say it. That's exactly what it is. It's a counterattack. It's kind of fun when we do it.
I love that, yeah.
It's fun both ways you do it. If you do it where it's the white team versus the green team from your full field scrimmage, and you're just like, oh, this is how we're going to end practice, you know, or you do a scrimmage and the game's tied rather than decide in overtime we're going to do 1st-to-5 this way, something like that. That's really fun because you get attacked and that got to go down and play some defense.
So the Poles actually gravitate to playing offense.
Oh, yeah, they want to play offense. So,
oh, duh. You're talking
more
about 35-year Pole.
More often
yeah.
than not, we do this early in practice when our offensive guys come out to practice. They wear white and our D guys wear green. So if we're doing it in that scenario, we'll start the 3-on-2s. Our transition middies, as I call them, are always in white. So it's really like all the short sticks are in white and all the Poles on our team are in green. So those transition middies and O middies in attack will go down 3-on-2. But those D guys on that 3-on-2 are fighting and clawing to get that stop because if they get it, they get to play some offense. I would imagine that there's some variation of this drill that takes place at Brown right now, the way that their poles are coming down and staying down and finishing tight under the crease.
Oh, man. I'm digging this one, Coach. Although it's hard to get the poles to rotate the ball to the backside pipe. Poles think once you're 15 yards, that's a green light.
Yeah, but...
I'm kidding.
Yeah, if you do it and you keep score, and you put some incentive, you know, the old reverse bear crawls for the loser, that'll stop those 15 yarders pretty quick.
Coach, I got to tell you, man, for a Christian, that was a pretty sadistic laugh at the end of that comment.
Yeah, well, we're all
Oh my gosh, I think my last podcast was Coach Ryan at Mercyhurst.
Yep.
And he's a lifelong Pole, you know. And in the podcast, going through, you have to listen to it, man, going through when he describes the drills on how he makes the, he designs drills that punish the attack, you know, because he's basically bears a grudge for 30 years.
Right.
And after every one of those, you get this little sadistic giggle. Well, he's an hysterical guy anyway. I mean, he's outrageously funny, but... Yeah, man, I love it. Good stuff. Good stuff. And you could actually integrate some middies in, you know, on both sides.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'll, you know, we had a team this year that we played twice that's just really, really good at pushing the ball in transition and kind of dodging you and getting it up and out. And so for those preparations, we would do this drill and we would make our O-middies play on the team that's down a guy just so they were getting, you know, mental reps of sprinting down into the hole and, you know, from the midfield line. Like, we don't care about anything other than how quickly you get inside out right now.
Well, and that is so outrageously important in today's game.
Right.
You know, you'll find this interesting. I think I did a podcast with Lars Tiffany. I think actually my third podcast. I just love him, man, as a coach. And you talk about coaches being willing to change. Oh, my
right.
God. You know, what a metamorphosis, you know, in the way that Brown plays from the Starzha model to you know, the family tree of the Starzha model to where they are now. But anyway... Yeah.
And he just looks so happy, doesn't he? On the sideline, you're watching these games on TV, and it's a one goal game, and his best players on the sideline, and he's
you
just.
You gotta listen to those podcasts. He is like one of my favorite quotes. You know, out of 135 hours, we were talking about like 4 or 5 years ago. A lot of people say that, you know, Hannon, when he was at Goucher, kind of started it. I don't know if that's true or not. Although I know Coach Hannon, but Charlie Toomey was telling us, I think the year they won the championship that. You know, he had modified his offense after, you know, really focusing on redirecting the ball topside instead of redirecting it through X, you know,
right.
Back to the weak side. And we were talking about, you know, nuances and offenses and offensive philosophies changing and his silence on the phone for about 8 or 9 seconds in. And then Lars Tiffany, as only Lars Tiffany can do it, you know. I mean, he's the kind of guy, if he married your sister, you'd be thrilled, you know.
Right.
And there's silence on the phone, and he goes, but you know what, Mike? He goes, nothing really happens till somebody beats somebody anyway.
Right.
You know? And you're sitting there going, man, like out of the mouths of babes, you know, or there it is in its most basic format, you know. But earlier this year, I think they had played like 3 games or 4 games or something, and he was very philosophical on this call. And they had just done a study of playing time. And his D middies were on the field for, and I can't quote it off the top of my head, but it was a huge number, like 68% or 74% of the game.
Right.
You know, and part of that was driven by the, you know, the Tufts integration into the transition style and take no prisoners and blah, 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 and never let up, you know. And he was wrestling, you know, with, you know, even in our last podcast, you know, you had made mention of the fact that, you know, we're looking for athletic guys that can go both ways, and maybe the day of the D midi you know, dwindling out for a myriad of reasons, the size of the box, the guys getting back, everything else. But, yeah, he was, suggesting that, you know, his D middies were not his developing offensive guys that played great defense. You know, really, he needed to take some offensive guys, possibly, you know, and put them on the D-middy side for what they can bring when they come down into the offensive box.
Right.
It was a really interesting conversation, you know, when he studied the time. He's going, man, he goes, I'd like to think we're playing great offense, but when you look at the game, my O-middies are only on the field for 35% of the game.
Right, right.
Which was, you know, kind of crazy. Oh, my gosh, we're coming up on it. Coach, you got any other new drills for me or stuff you want to talk about?
No, I think that's it. I think the man down against the 6-on-6 is something that, like, it basically allows you to practice everything after that, as Coach Tiffany said, beating that initial guy. And we have, you know, we do a lot of other things to get better at beating that initial guy, and we have the luxury of recruiting. So the hard part is what you do after you beat that guy, and that's our way of getting better at it in a really realistic way for both our offense and defensive guys and our goalies, to get better at those shots, those high percentage shots that you just can't afford to not bury.
So when we talked a couple years ago, man, I loved ending practice with your overtime,
right?
You know, or play to one to end. Now that you're integrating that into the beginning of practice, do you have something that you're closing practice out that is fun, competitive, fast-paced? I mean, I got to tell you what, man, I've done that once or twice a week with every team I've coached from, you know, from Auburn into Whitfield Academy, you know, the Christian school. The kids love it, you know.
Yeah, we'll do it. I mean, just because we start with practice doesn't mean we can't end it with it as well. So
Do you still use it sometimes then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So sometimes we'll, if we start practice with it, and a lot of times the losing team will run a little bit, you know, just so there's something on the line.
Right.
You know, and sometimes if that goal happens at the beginning of practice for overtime, they'll start to kind of jog over to the end line to get ready.
I appreciate you saying they're running, but we all know they're doing reverse bear crawls. That's,
yeah, there you go, there you go.
That's the funniest line of the whole podcast, man.
They'll go over and they'll get ready for their reverse bear crawls, and I'll say, no, you know, I'll say this score isn't settled yet. We're going overtime at the end of practice for the real winner or something, or there's a rubber match coming, and then we'll end it with overtime as well, you know. And then, you know, our practices are pretty fun, so sometimes I'll go down to the defensive guys and I'll say, when we go overtime at the end, you guys all need to shut off your guy, and I'll predetermine that the faceoff is a fast break forward, and let our Fogo come down and go one-on-one with the goalie to end it, and we'll even do that sometimes with some strategy things. I mean, we played a game late in the year where we really felt like our, you know, to Coach Tiffany's point, our D-middies, as everyone else calls them, can really dodge at some of the O-middies that are getting back for this opposing team. And so
exactly true. Yeah.
We kind of predetermined that in the overtime segment we were going to create a one-on-one with our D-middie dodging, you know, one of our O-middies that doesn't want a whole lot to do with defense. You know, thinking that matchup was going to be pretty good and the overtime period would end that way, thus giving us confidence for what the scouting report called for in the next game. So sometimes we can even kind of predetermine what that overtime looks like a little bit to either make a coaching point or just have the guys have a little bit of fun. But typically it's just genuinely one team wants to win more than the other at the end of practice when we've kind of exhausted them both physically and mentally. And it becomes a lot of fun.
I did have one question on that for you, though, when I was listening to the previous podcast. Do you get, or how do you get, or is it important to you to get 45 guys or 35 guys from your roster in that last drill?
Oh, no, that doesn't happen, to be honest with you. You know, and we have a boatload of goalies, so typically they'll just rotate every other practice. We don't, to be honest with you, who's playing in those moments, unless it's like a predetermined scout thing that I was talking about, is of really no concern to me. So I have two assistants, so one's coaching one team, one's coaching the other, and I officiate it. So I'm actually out in the middle of the field and have no idea who they're going to put out there. So sometimes it's, you know, this guy had a great practice. Let's go put him out there as a starting attackman for this overtime scrimmage. You know, sometimes it's a guy.
Okay.
You know, maybe there's a guy who lacking a little confidence or in a little bit of a slump, so we're going to put him out there hoping he makes a play in this overtime that kind of gets him out of his slump or something. So there's really no... there's no way you're going to get all the guys on the team involved, but all the guys on the team are going to do those reverse bear crawls. So on the sideline, you have their intention. It's like game day when we go overtime at the York practice to conclude, because everyone's going to do the I guess punishment is the word, but you know, the loser has to do something. And so
we call it character builder.
Whether they got on that, in that drill or not, they're going to be doing them. So yeah, that backup goalie who didn't get in, he is coaching the defense from the sideline like crazy.
Well, and you know what? Yeah, that's why you're a coach of the year, and I'm on the phone doing podcasts in Atlanta. It never occurred to me, if you're going to run that 3 days a week, rotate your personnel all the time.
Right. Yeah.
They're all going to
end up in that situation at some point in their career, and we want them to be as comfortable in that situation as possible.
No, that's, yeah.
It should be worth noting that our season ended in overtime this year. So, and it wasn't because of a lack of practicing those overtimes, I can claim, but we did lose in overtime to end the year this year.
No, I get it, man. Hey, Coach, I can't believe we're already on it. Give me a minute on the recruiting camps, and I'll have the link from your site posted. I want to say they were in June, weren't they?
Yeah, we do two prospect days here at York. We cap them at 60 kids, so no more than 60 kids at each of them. The first is coming up here in June on June 12th, and then the second is in end of July on July 28th. So there's two opportunities to come and work with our staff and you know, be a York College lacrosse player for a day, so you get a good insight as to what it's like.
Those are one day, weren't they, Coach?
One day, yep, one day. In and out, eat in the dining hall, go through one of our practice plans in the morning where you're actually doing some of the drills that you and I spoke about today. And then And then in the afternoon, you know, putting two teams together of those 60 and letting them play.
Hey, man, how's the food at York?
Food's great at York, both on campus and off campus. And the amount of weight I've gained over the last 5 years is a testament to just how good the food is.
I don't think so, man. I've been looking at your pictures. I was cropping some pictures today to put on the site when I post this, and you look the same to me, man.
Well, that's because we've been cropping them before we put them on the site.
Hey, you know what works for me is when you crop that picture and then you can drag it vertically down. Oh, yeah, man. I look like I'm 140 pounds. It's awesome.
That's right.
I love computers. I love computers. Hey, Coach, stay on the line with me, man. Hour goes so fast, doesn't it? Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, are you kidding me? You have provided, like I was mentioning to you, I mean, it's just mind-blowing how popular your podcast a couple of years ago was, and I certainly promoted it because I got stuff I use every week out of your podcast, and you know, I may interview a big name D1 guy three times and use his stuff once a month. You're doing really, really creative things and with a really neat philosophy at analyzing what's going to put the team in a position to be successful, emulating game scenarios and the way you do things here. Anyway, stay on the line with me. We're going to wrap it up. This is Lex Coach Mike, LexCoachMike.com. Hey, man, remember this. You got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously every day. Do your prep. Do your practice plans. It's just hypocritical to expect your players to spend time on the wall and you not spending time getting better as a coach. Until next time, God bless everybody.
Yeah, I hope you got all that. Again, special thanks to our buddies at Crossover, and I am so humbled by your support of my site, man. You all mean the world to me. Email me, stay in touch. You guys are just absolutely awesome, and we'll keep trying to provide strong content. Of course, always remember, man, it's not me. It's the coaches that come on and share their time and are so honest and frank in what they do. We're so appreciative of them and of you.